The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
So, hello, welcome. This is, of course, the final hooter, courtesy of the Radio General, and we are the podcast for loverugbyleague.com. I'm Dave Parkinson, delighted to be joined in the studio by James Gordon. And James, how are you doing? Are you all magicked out?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I am, Dave. I'm not sure I am. We had a good weekend, didn't we? Alternative match on the Sunday, so... But yeah, we got it all again this weekend for the Summer Bash, for the Championship version, so lots of games to get our teeth stuck into there.
If I can fire straight in at the Magic weekend just gone, what was your thoughts of it? 64,000, I think, was the combined attendance for both days, a little bit down on last year. Good event, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not the best person to ask. I mean, I go to the rugby to watch the rugby, do you know what I mean? I don't go, you know, I don't drink, so I don't go for that side of things. I just go to watch the rugby. So for me, I'll go and watch my team, or if I'm working, I'll go and cover whatever else. But I can see why people enjoy it as a weekend. Like you say, slightly disappointing that the crowd was down. I think, you know, there's a few other things going on Saturday. I've seen a few people say, would it be better on a bank holiday weekend? Because I think, you know, if you look at Hull and Hull KR played at 5:30 or something on the Sunday night.
They've got to get back to getting to work the next day,
yeah,
haven't they?
They've got to get back from Newcastle. And it means you can't, like, enjoy yourself at the match and go out after and stuff. Whereas I think you'd probably find that if you had it this weekend, you know, where you've got the bank holiday Monday after it, I think you'd probably get more people going. I have a few concerns about, you know, how, I mean, I don't know what the breakdown is, so I've not got any, there's no scientific fact behind this, what I'm about to say, but you just sort of feel like a majority of the crowd is made up of people who go to the games anyway.
Okay.
If you watch when teams go to France, you know, to play Catalan, the first year, there's loads of people there. The second year, there's still loads of people there. But when
are you saying the novelty's wearing off?
Yeah, I think people go. Well, I'm not saying, I mean, that sounds negative, but I think that's probably what's happening, is that people are going, and they might go a couple of years, and then they might think, oh, well, I'm not going to bother this year, having already been. I guess, you know, when there's all this discussion about moving it to other places, and
that's a rugby league hazard, that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and
we always talk about change.
But obviously,
don't we?
I think it is the right thing to move it. I think it probably should have moved before this year. I think 3 years in one place is enough. But, you know, I'm concerned, you know, if they move it to New, you know, they're talking about New York, and I'm just like, well,
that's even more expensive for people to get to.
Well, yeah, but that's the problem, I think, Dave, is that the reality is the bulk of that crowd, match going fans anyway, the people who go and watch Warrington week in, week out, or Widnes week in, week out, or Hull KR week in, week out. I'm not saying that there weren't any other fans there, because obviously there was, but I think as soon as you start shifting it abroad or somewhere where them, you know, a large percentage of them fans aren't going to be able to go to New York to watch it, so then who's going to be in the stadium? You know, are we confident enough that you can market the event sufficiently enough to get a large crowd in, when bearing in mind that Newcastle's not that far away, and you can only get 38,000 in there as your best day on the Saturday. That would be my, you know, that would be my concern about it. You know, I mean, I like rugby as much as the next person, but do I want to be sat on a plastic seat to watch four matches in a row? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have to admit, I mean, you know that I'm a rugby league fanatic. You cut me and I bleed rugby league, but I can't sit for more than two or three games.
Yeah, and
I struggle whenever there's three games scheduled. I always struggle with the last one.
I think you'd be better. And then the other issue is that you know there's 38,000 people there, but you never have 38,000 in the stadium at one time.
No,
you know, you might be, the most you probably had at one time was maybe 20,000. And I'm thinking, I sort of feel like a double header type would be better. So have two, you know, so imagine if you had Wigan and Warrington, Leeds versus Cass.
Well, do we mention other sports? I mean, they've gone down the double header route, haven't they?
Well, it works really well for rugby union, definitely. I mean, and the thing is with them is they're looking at, right, we sell out Twickenham or whatever, 70,000 people, but people will sit and watch two games because people can stomach watching two games. They can't stomach watching, and I'm not saying that people don't do it, but a lot of people won't want to sit there for four games and watch four games. Whereas with a double header, it's like, right, well, we sell Twickenham are selling it as a double header. I think they opened the season with it this season. I think there was two games at Twickenham that opened the season. It was Saracens and Saracens. Harlequins played London Irish. I only remember it because London Irish only won one game, and it was that game.
Oh, right,
and
okay.
Then they lost every other game. And I think that's really good because they can market them to them four teams. You know, because you look at the Sunday, Salford, Catalan, Wakefield, Huddersfield. I mean, how many fans are they brought between them? You know, and it's that's my main struggle with it. I think the magic, as much as people bang on about the Magic Weekend being great and having all the teams in one place being great, I'm just like, I'm sure it would be easier to. But also to make it look better as well, because like I say, bear in mind, St James Park holds what, 60,000?
Yeah.
So even if everybody who's bought a ticket, the 38,000 are in there at any one time, it's still, there's still a lot of empty seats in there, but the 38,000 aren't in there at the same time at any point.
That's actually a really, really good point. I mean, in essence, then you could have three double headers, and that'd sort out your Magic Weekend. So you could take it and have it maybe in different parts of the country, depending on what you're targeting. So, for example, we've got teams down south. We've got one in Coventry. So why not have a section of Magic Weekend played down in Coventry, for example? Then at least you're trying to grow the game. I can understand it being up in Newcastle with Newcastle Thunder. They did a great job against Bradford Bulls in having nearly 4,500 there on the Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, you could, you know, there's a few ways you could do it. Could you have? Do you have two games a day over 3 days? Do you have two games at three different grounds on the same day or over the same weekend? You know, I look at the crowds. The crowds every year are relatively, they're quite similar, aren't they? There's not as much as it was lower this year. It wasn't lower by.
No, it was only by a couple of hundred, wasn't
it? Likewise, when it's higher, it's only higher by a little bit. So it's like, for me, it's like, it's not moving forward. It's just doing the same year in, year out. And it's a bit like, you know, is it, you know, I don't know what they're trying to achieve out of it or whatever it is, but I don't know. That's just my sort of inkling and feeling on it at the moment.
Okay, I mean, it'd be great to get other people's views as well, and I'm sure that you've probably got a couple of blogs up your sleeve with regards to that type of stuff and arguing about the fours and what fours have.
I've always got things up my sleeve. You know me, Dave. I mean, like I said, I think the fixtures for me are an issue. You know, it's not fair that. Whichever way you do it, you can't make it fair. You know, you can't make it fair. I mean, look at Catalan. Catalan, with all due respect to Salford, Catalan have picked up 2 points against Salford, whereas Widnes have played St Helens. Now, I'm sure Widnes would much prefer to have played Salford and had a better chance of getting the 2 points. Likewise, Warrington have played Wigan. I'm sure Warrington would have much preferred to have played Widnes. And it's not fair. And I obviously hear people all the time saying, oh, they should draw it out of a hat or they should do it on league. But it's still not going to be fair because ultimately you can't have it where you've got one extra game. You play every team twice, but then you've got one odd team that you play.
Well, you know my feelings. I, even though it's been a well-established event, and I can see why they keep doing it, because if you're getting 60,000 people over the course of a weekend paying the money, going into the ground, then that is a bit of a money spinner, isn't it?
Well, don't get me wrong.
But what I'm sort of thinking is that it's never sat right with me having that artificial round in a league structure. For me, it just doesn't work. And I can argue the same about the Summer Bash as well. As much as I love going to the Summer Bash, as much as we're going to enjoy covering that for Love Rugby League over the course of the next weekend, it doesn't feel like it's a proper league thing, does it?
No, and, you know, people have talked about, you know, you hear people talking about, should we have a nines competition? I mean, I don't see the point in nines, so I'm not the right advocate for that. Do you have a Challenge Cup quarter-final weekend? But then the issue you've got with that is that you can't start selling tickets for it. I think, and like I say, I mean, it's almost like the thing with the Challenge Cup quarter-final is they start selling tickets for Magic Weekend in November last year. Mm. As soon as you know it's happening. You know your team's going to be playing on what day. Whereas as soon as you start saying we're doing the Challenge Cup quarterfinals,
yeah, you don't know until
a few weeks earlier, and that then thinks, you know, like say at the moment they're selling 68,000 tickets. Well, if people aren't going to know until 4 weeks before, how did he manage it? Now, whether you could get to the point where you think, oh well, rugby league fans will just go there out of habit, regardless of whether, I think that's a big question is, would you go if your team wasn't there? You know, that them 68,000 people, if their team wasn't playing there, how many of them 68,000 people wouldn't go? I think that would be an interesting thing to find out. Because that's what you mean. If you're turning it into like a rugby league festival or whatever you want to call it for a weekend, should it matter to you that there's four Challenge Cup quarterfinals going on and your team isn't one of them, but they're still the biggest and best teams in Super League in there? You know, I'm not sure. Is there a way you could fudge it a little bit so that all the Super League teams are there in some shape or form? I don't know.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Okay, we've done the discussion part of it, so you know our feelings. But what actually happened this last weekend? I mean, on the Saturday was a really good occasion, to be honest. 38 was the magic number because you had 38,000 people in the ground over the course of the day. You had each of the winning sides chalking up 38 points, and if you added all the points up that the losers scored, that came to 38 as well. That's rugby league symmetry.
Yeah, it was an odd one, wasn't it? You'd have got a lot of money for putting that on, Dave.
I wish I'd put a pound on. That would have been great. I would never have thought of 38, though. That's just really creative, I think. But, let us start by looking at a couple of these fixtures. So, first of all, St Helens and Widnes. Widnes have got themselves in a right spiral at the moment, where no matter what they seem to do, no matter how hard they push, luck just doesn't bounce their way.
Yeah, I mean, it was ironic, really, that everyone was talking about St Helens and Widnes being a bit unfair and a bit one-sided, and that was actually the closest match on Saturday. I thought Widnes were a bit hard done to with a couple of the decisions. Certainly, Regan Gracie's try was off a knock-on. There was that one in the second half where Morgan scored, where Stephen Marsh got his foot under the ball, and you know, it was one of them. He definitely didn't ground it. For me, it was either a no try or a penalty try. It wasn't a try, and that was a bit of an odd one. I mean, I don't think Widnes would have won the game regardless of those two decisions, but I guess it's one of them things where Dennis Betts will look at it and think, well, when luck's against you, and I think I said this on Twitter actually, is when luck, Saints are the same, you know, Saints the other way, you know, when you're playing well and you're doing well, the luck seems to fall on your side. I think the problem Widnes have got at the moment is they're showing up pretty well against the big teams. So, like, they've played Saints, Leeds and Wigan in the past few weeks and played really well against all three of those teams. They pushed Leeds all the way last week. They give Saints a good game on Saturday. They've led Wigan twice at half-time and then ended up falling away a little bit. But the problem for Widnes is that when they've played, like, Huddersfield
have been much better than them on those occasions, haven't they?
Yeah, like Widnes have been terrible the two times they played Huddersfield this season, and I think that's the worry. It's like, it's a big game this Friday for Widnes against Wakefield, because it's like, are they going to play at the same level that they put in against St Helens? Because it's a must-win game, you know, ultimately.
In that game, St Helens scored tries through Richardson, Percival, Grace got two, Barber and Morgan got two as well, with Richardson kicking 5 goals from 8 attempts. For the Vikings, it was tries from Whitley, Albert and Kynehorst, with Marsh kicking 3 goals. And just a little bit of news which we've had over the last few hours. Kynehorst being recalled by Leeds due to the injury that's been picked up.
Yeah, Callum Watkins out for the season, isn't he? Yeah, that's a problem for when you rely on loan players, isn't it?
Because he just looked like he was settling in at Widnes as well.
Well, it's been an odd one, I think, with Kynehorst, because he's been there for 5 or 6 weeks, but he's only played 3 games because he joined. They've played 2 Challenge Cup matches, and Leeds didn't want him playing. It transpired that one of them was against Leeds in the end, anyway. So it's been a bit. He's been a bit stop start because he joined, couldn't play because there was a cup game. Played 1 match, then had a week off because there was a cup game, then played another game, and it's like, I don't think Widnes are really seeing the best out of him, and obviously now Widnes are going to have to look at their squad again and find someone to play on Friday night.
The second game of the Magic weekend, as far as the Super League clubs were concerned, because we did have a Championship fixture which kicked it all off, which we'll talk about in a few minutes' time. But Warrington Wolves 10, Wigan 38. I thought Wigan were crash hot in the second half of that one.
I've said it a few times. I've seen Wigan quite a few times this season, and I just think that they're playing well, but you still feel like they've got loads more in them. So I know a lot of their fans have been talking about how they seem to struggle a little bit in the first half, and then second half they sort of put the afterburners on and I don't think they've lost the second half this season, have they? No, I think they've won all 15. When Widnes played Wigan, Widnes winning 16-0, but you could tell with Wigan's attack, it was one of them where Widnes were winning 16-0, but you were looking at Wigan's attack and you were thinking they've got the shape in it that at some point it's going to stick and they're going to come back, and that's what happened. And I think for me it's quite ominous from a Wigan point of view that they're up there, they've won the majority of their games, but you still feel like there's a lot of room, there's a lot more potential in them than it's coming out at the moment.
And the way that they impressed as well in the last sort of 10-20 minutes of that game as well, I mean they took it to another level, didn't they? I mean, just looking at the scorers and when the tries came, so Powell opened the scoring for Wigan after 27 minutes, Sam Tompkins scored after 30 minutes, Bateman scored after 51 minutes. Williams followed that up a couple of minutes later, and then there was late tries from Marshall and Davis all within the last 6 minutes.
Yeah, they rounded it off quite well, didn't they, when the game had sort of been lost for Warrington. I know they had that try disallowed, didn't they, Warrington, with about 10 minutes to go, which sort of was a bit like that was the fat lady singing almost. Really impressed with Sam Tompkins. I think he's a really interesting one where, you know, he's struggled, I guess, with injury since he came back to Wigan, and people had written him off. You know, he got left out of the England squad, which, if you'd have said that a few years ago, you'd have thought was unthinkable. And
yeah, he'd be the first name on the team sheet, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think Tompkins is really showing, like, why he's really... I think, for me, this is the season where he's really proving a point and showing why he is... You know, well, he should be regarded as a top player, and you can just see he's got that. He's like, you look at him, and he's got that steely sort of determination, almost like he's on a mission to prove a point that he has got the quality, and he's delivering on the pitch. And you know, I'm looking at it at the moment, thinking Man of Steel is potentially between Barber and Tompkins, and all the trophies are potentially Saints or Wigan. That's what I'm looking at the moment.
I know what you're seeing in Sam Tompkins. It's the eye of the tiger, isn't it? That's sort of the...
Honestly, I think, you know, I remember I wrote a column actually on this on Sunday. I think he when Wigan were sort of closing out the game late on, he grubbered a kick that was meant to go into touch, ended up bouncing dead in goal, which means a 7-tackle set, and Tompkins was so, he was like furious
living
with himself,
yeah.
And like they were winning by 16 points, and it's like that's the difference between, that's a winner's mentality, that's a winner's attitude.
Livette and Ratchford responded for the Wolves with one goal from Goodwin. It's interesting to note as well, Sam Tompkins picking up the kicking boots this season at Wigan, 7 from 9. I mean, that's a pretty good strike rate, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, we saw a game on Sunday that was lost, but they dropped points because of the issue with the goal kicking. So yeah, you've got to be steady in the game, and that might focus him as well, because he's got to put that extra work in to get them extra points.
I mentioned about the eye of the tiger, and I've been quite critical of Castleford Tigers this season, but for me, their performance against Leeds is one that should make a lot of people sit up and take notice. And myself, I could be eating my words, because if they perform at the level which they did against Leeds for the rest of the season, then they're going to be there or thereabouts, aren't they?
Well, they had a tough start at Castleford, and I think this is a thing, and I've said this as well, you know, in columns elsewhere, that no one's talking about Castleford. Everyone seems to have written them off a little bit, but they've won 12, lost 4. I think, is that right? And you know, they had a really, you know, they got thumped by St Helens, didn't they, in that first game? In
you're giving them a little bit more credit than they deserve. They've won 9 and lost 4, but they're
still
still really handily placed.
I think. Well, I just think that in terms of like what everyone's, you know, no one's really talking about them, written them off. They've had injuries. You know, Luke Gale's not there, and I think they're still, like you say, they're still there or thereabouts. They're still within sort of touching distance, and they showed against Leeds that they can still put a dominant performance together, even when they're missing the key players. Like, I suppose it's different, because like last season it was like no one was expecting it, whereas I guess this season everyone's got their card marked a little bit. St Helens handed him a good kicking in the first game, and then they limped sort of past Widnes actually in the second game, and they've had a couple of other defeats along the way. But I think they're a dark horse. Well, yeah, they're now sliding back into that territory that they were before last season, you know, where people probably don't think about them as a contender, and that actually might suit them far better than, you know, when you put on the pedestal and everyone's challenging you.
Which is what happens at Leeds, and I mean, they've got, again, everybody picks up injuries, but they've got a quite notable injury list at the moment, haven't they, with guys that haven't been getting out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. They've lost Watkins. I don't think Leeds' injuries are particularly any worse. You know, they've had both their halves have been there, which is more than quite a few of the teams have mustered. I know Brian McDermott was keen to point out that they were missing a few big men up front.
But yeah, being games are won up front, and if Leeds don't have that size.
But ultimately, Mullally got suspended. That was his own fault. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's, like I say, everyone's getting injuries. Leeds are struggling a little bit. But again, Leeds have just got that. They just know how to do it at the back end, and that's why I think Leeds are probably looking at they're not really that worried, I don't think. I think as much as they're losing games and they're probably not winning as many as they'd like, they know that it's the back end of the season that matters. And how many times have we seen Leeds teams come to life at the back end of the season and then take the glory?
I suppose at this moment in time, they've just got to keep in touch with those at the top four, so I'm not get too far behind and hope that they can catch it up.
Well, I think obviously the way the league's definitely split into two sixes now, isn't it? In terms of you've got the top six and the bottom six. And I think as long as you can stay within touching distance of that top four come round 23, it's then in your own hands, because you're going to be playing the teams around you anyway. Look how far Huddersfield finished eighth last season, then they were well adrift, but they won the first three games, and all of a sudden everyone was thinking, blimey, could they sneak in? So, like I say, the key thing for Leeds is while they've got these injuries or why they're struggling is that they just keep up with the team, you know, just like, so they're still in striking distance when it comes to it.
So the try scorers for Cass were Hitchcock, Foster, Moores, Shenton, Milner and Holmes, with Ellis kicking 7 from 8 goals. For the Rhinos, they had a try from Ledski, another one from Ferris right near the end, with Watkins kicking a goal before going off injured, like we've already talked about. Action switched over to Sunday. We've already mentioned about Salford Red Devils being particularly off colour, shall we say, against Catalan's Dragons. That was a must-win for somebody, that. That was a must-win encounter, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I mean, we talked about the fixtures. The thing is those games against the teams around you are so important. So for Catalan to win that game gives them a massive boost, because it not only does it give them 2 points, but it also pulls them closer to a team around them or a team that they're competing for top eight.
Garcia, Busquet and Broughton were the try scorers. Broughton actually grabbing a hat-trick there. Gigo kicking 3 goals from 6 attempts. For the Red Devils, it was tries from Haraki and Griffin, with 2 goals from a returning Robert Louis, but it wasn't enough, and Catalan's Dragons won through by 26 points to 12. That 38 cropping up again if you add them both up. Something's happening here, I'm telling you. Huddersfield Giants broke the mould, because they defeated Wakefield 25 points to 22. They actually led 19 points to 6 at half time, thanks to tries from Murphy, O'Brien and Mamo. A second half try from McIntosh edged them further in front. Brough kicking 4 goals and a drop goal. Wakefield responding with tries from Ashurst, Jones Bishop grabbing 2, and Reece Lynn with Liam Finn kicking 3 goals from 4 attempts. They didn't quite manage to do it, did they, Wakefield?
Yeah, a bit of a comeback, wasn't it? I think they went down to 25-6 at one point. So, a fair effort. Wakefield are on a bit of a wobble, like you say. And as we've already said, Widnes Wakefield this week's a bit of a four-pointer, I guess. Wakefield were the team that, before the start of the season, we were talking about a 7-5. You know, I was talking about a 7-5 split. And Wakefield have dropped out of the 7 and gone into the bottom 6 now. So whereas it was 5 teams scrambling, I saw a Salford fan actually as I was coming out of the office before, and I was talking to him, and it was like, whereas before we thought it was 5 teams going for 1 spot, it's now 6 teams going for 2 spots, because Wakefield have sort of fell into that gaggle, if you like.
The weekend was rounded off with a return of the Hull derby. Hull FC 34, Hull Kingston Rovers 22. A couple of nice side stories regarding this, because I mentioned injuries. Hull are awash with them at the moment. They brought Kurt Yeaman back out of retirement to take a spot and get to 375 appearances for Hull, in his career. When he retired previously, he was on 374. I wonder whether he's looking at 400, you know.
Oh, well, he might be. He'd have to do another season, wouldn't he?
And again, Hull Kingston Rovers missing a lot of the players that they paid a lot of the money for.
Yeah, it's really tough, Hull Car, because they've not really been able to have a fair crack at it, have they? They've sort of been hammered by injuries for the whole season. They sort of entered the season a bit behind. I don't think Tim Sheens was 100% happy with the squad that he put together. He's still
got nearly 40 players at his disposal, though.
Yeah, but I think, you know, they were still trying to get, they had the Robert Louis thing at the start of the season, didn't they? They were still trying to get a half back in, and that, I think that sort of said that he's not 100% happy with who he's got. And you know, and obviously that's been compounded by the injuries. You know, Danny Maguire had a blood clot, I think, so he's out for a little bit. And they've just got injuries everywhere. You look, Hull KR, and they're in a position, Hull KR, where they need they'd find it hard enough with the first choice team out there. And I feel a bit sorry for them, because they've not really had the chance to get going as yet.
So the scorers in this one for Hull: Taylor grabbing a try, Scholl scoring two, Harris scoring on debut, and Logan and Connor also going over for tries. Connor kicking 5 goals from 6 attempts. He must be a shoo-in for England, mustn't he?
Yeah, surely to Denver. Nice trip to Denver for him.
For Hull Kingston Rovers, Kieran Moss is a bloke that can't stop scoring. He was over at York a couple of weeks ago, scored 7 tries in one game. He's followed that up with a hat-trick on a losing account for Hull Kingston Rovers. Tommy Lee scoring the other one. I weren't too sure about that one. That's probably I didn't think that was a try, I've got to be honest there, with Shaw kicking 3 goals from 4.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Yes, so welcome back to the Final Hooter, the podcast for loverugbyleague.com. Live, of course, on Radio General, Warrington's own hospital radio as well. And James, we were discussing the Magic Weekend. I suppose final thoughts before we move on from that. Does anything stand out? Did any performances grab your attention?
I think Wigan and Casford are probably the two for me that stand out, I guess, in terms of both of them teams have basically put a bit of markers down and said, look, you know, we're here and, you know, you've got to come and beat us. I think from them two teams' point of view, I think they would have been very happy. You know, Huddersfield have won 3 in a row now, so they'll be quite happy with that. Catalan will come away with it quite happy, having picked up a valuable win there. Hull and Saints will probably look at it and think, well, we'd be expected to win them games the way that they have done anyway. You know, it's just another game in the calendar.
So we'll look at the table. See St Helens out on top, 26 points from their 15 games. Wigan tucked in behind them, just 2 points behind. Then there's a 4-point gap with Warrington in third with 20 points on the league table. Hull in fourth with 18, tying with Castleford Tigers. Leeds Rhinos sixth, Wakefield seventh on 12 points. Salford Red Devils just about hanging on to 8th spot with 10 points. Huddersfield Giants are breathing down their neck. Then it's the Catalans Dragons, Widnes Vikings, and currently bottom of Super League, Hull Kingston Rovers at the midway point, or just past the midway point of the season, as this testifies. Let us move on and look at a couple of the news stories. It's been a really good day when we're recording this show, by the way, because there's been lots and lots of news broken. I want to start, first of all, with Kieran Pirtle at Lee Centurions. He's been the interim coach there for the last 2 or 3 months. He's now got the job until at least the end of the season. I think it's a really good move, that, for Lee.
Yeah, I mean, they just sort of got on with it, haven't they, and not made any dramas, which sometimes happens at Lee. He sort of took interim charge and they've let him get on with it, and they've won, what have they won now, Dave? 11 in a row.
11 in a row, yeah.
So, you know, it's a no-brainer to just let him continue. In some ways, I'm surprised that they've announced. I thought maybe they'd just carry on going. You know, have that many people been questioning it? Have many people been asking, well, who's the new coach, Lee? I think people had just got used to the idea that Pirtle was the coach anyway. So I was a little bit of surprise for that. But they've obviously got a big game this weekend against Toronto. And, you know, 11 games ago, we were worried that this would be one of the games that you're thinking, well, we were working out how many games we thought they needed to win. And we were looking at this one thinking, well, this is going to be a must win. It's not even quite a must win anymore, but you could see them knocking Toronto off.
I mean, they've had a good weekend against Featherstone as well, 42-20 away from home. Good performance, halfbacks linking well. I know initially it wasn't happening for the two young guys, but I think under the tutelage of Pirtle, who was a halfback himself in his playing days. They seem to have knitted together really well.
Yeah, well, obviously he's found the magic formula, if you like, and that's shown. He had a really difficult start to the season. I think they probably tried to change too many things at the start of the season. You know, they'd recruited quite a lot of players, and I don't think they were quite sure who was best where and what combinations worked. Obviously, they had Drinkwater removed on, and you know, I know there was the Craig Hall shift. You know, he started playing fullback, didn't he, at the start of the year, and he's been shifted into the centres.
Yeah, the masterstroke was putting Peter Matautia at fullback, because he's been absolutely sensational ever since.
And I think that's the problem, is you recruit so many new players, and if you start off and it's not working, unless you change it, you know, it's not. And I think maybe that was the problem at the start of the season. They were trying to carry on going and hope that it was going to click at some point. And obviously, since Pirtle's come in, he's made a few changes and it's worked.
It's really interesting as well that in the press release that came out from Lee, the first thing he's done, he's thanked his players and the other coaching staff, because he sees it as his appointment being a reward for the work that they've done for him.
Well, I thought it was interesting to see that about the comment made about when Paul Rowley left, that Pirtle wanted the job then, and ultimately Derek Beaumont had promised Dukes the job and so couldn't get him in. So it's clear that Pirtle's wanted to do it for a long time, and much like, you know, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but much like the Sean Wayne thing, you sort of feel like sometimes Pirtle's connection with Lee,
I mean, he's a former captain, played nearly 100 games for the club.
Yeah, it's like, does that get an extra? I mean, he's not quite at the same level as Sean Wayne in terms of, you know, you cut Sean Wayne and he bleeds Wigan, but does that sort of care or passion for the club just get that extra bit out of your players that maybe having somebody else doesn't?
And I think as well, bringing Mickey Higham back from retirement,
I think the thing with
but that's been a good thing.
I think with Mickey Higham was, it was clear that he didn't want to retire. He basically got retired off. It was almost like he'd been forced to retire because he didn't want to play for anyone else, but because Lee was signing everybody, they didn't have the space for him. And that's, you know, which to me, surely you're thinking, well, you know, we're better off with him and changing recruit and recruit your team thinking that you're going to have him.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly come back with a point to prove, put it that way. You know, it's been really interesting seeing the dynamic that he's brought back in. So, yeah, so 11 wins on the trot. It's all looking hunky-dory. Kieran Pirtle rewarded for his hard work and his dedication. And come to this, is an interesting little comment that I got sent on Twitter earlier on, because I was, you know, congratulating Kieran on his appointment, and Dave Taylor, who I know is a regular listener to the podcast, says, yes, it seems like a good reward for his hard work and dedication. He's looking forward to our observations about the town's other teams' coach leaving. I didn't realise that Lee Miners had changed the coach, or Lee East, and I'd hope someone would tell me with my connections with Lee East.
Yeah, it's your poor Lee banter this, Dave, isn't it?
It is. I said I wouldn't bite, but yeah, let's move on. I mean, the biggest job arguably in rugby league is coming vacant at the end of the season. We're talking Wigan Warriors, Sean Wayne. He's been a part of things what almost seems like forever. I know he had stints playing elsewhere in his playing days, but it's a connection with Wigan that's lasted about 30 years. He's seen and overseen so many of these young players coming through. I think he'll end up going out being something like the fifth longest serving Wigan coach, which is, you know, real credit to the bloke, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote this on Twitter, actually. Every club wishes they had someone with Sean Wayne's ability that cared as much about their club as he does about Wigan. You know, his sole focus has been Wigan. It's been getting them players through. And, you know, I've even had a couple of run-ins with him, you know, over the years in terms of, because he's been trying to protect his young guys or protect his players, and you know, his passion. I think a lot. You know, there's a lot to be said for passion, and I think his passion and energy does bring out extra in the Wigan players. But I think it's easy to look at him and think that's what he's all about. Clearly, he isn't, because he's obviously got the technical and the tactical nous to get the best out of them. There's a lot to be said about, well, how's it got to this? You know, why have Wigan decided they want to go in another direction, or why has he decided he wants to go in another direction? I don't think them questions have particularly been answered yet, but it'll be really interesting to see how he does, because, like I say, I truly believe that his passion for Wigan gets an extra 10-15% out of his players. Is he going to be able to get that sort of passion out of players at wherever he ends up? I mean, I know a few people have been mentioning Catalan, but I was thinking Toronto.
Really?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I don't know.
Has anybody told Paul Rowley yet?
Well, I don't know. Like I say, you know, it's just me thinking, really. That's
a speculator and a half, James.
Well, bottom line is, Rowley hasn't coached in Super League. That's the bottom line. Toronto are going to want to go in, and they're going to win. They want to win Super League. And ultimately, if they've got a Sean Wayne-type figure there who's been there, done it, he can attract the players, you know, is that something they might... Especially after the whole Warrington thing where they got a lot of grief over the style of play, and, you know, that's not a Toronto thing, that's a... I like Paul Rowley, I get on with him, but that's the way he sets his teams up. You know, we've seen it with Lee. I don't know, do you know what I mean? He said in his press conference today that he's not got he's not got a job lined up.
Do you not think he might have been tempted by a rugby union move, potentially? Because there's been coaches that have moved from league to union with some success. Yeah, look at Sean Edwards has built a career for himself in rugby union.
Yeah, there's loads of rugby league lads in rugby. You know, you've got Andrew Farrell and...
Brad Davis, I was reading as well, ex-Castleford man.
Well, Paul Deacon's being linked with the Wigan job, and he's obviously at Sale Sharks at the moment. And yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting that he's just sort of put his neck on the line. He's not got anything lined up, and he's having a look at what's out there. And, you know, there aren't many top jobs in... You know, there's not many jobs going around in rugby league, is there? Let's be honest. You've got 12 teams over here, 15, 16 in Australia. And then, you know, other than the two or three international jobs, there's nothing else to go at. And obviously, the majority of them teams have already got coaches in place.
You mentioned Toronto. Interesting, just to reflect on their game against Toulouse. They won by 43 points to 30. Liam Kay can't stop scoring. One of those tries should never, ever have been. Dived in at the corner, lost the ball. I thought the one that was disallowed at the start of the first half was closer to a try than the one that he got given. But that's a different conversation entirely. For me, I still think that they concede too many points. I thought Toulouse showed quite a few weaknesses around the Toronto game.
Well, I mean, you say that, Dave, but it doesn't matter how many you concede as long as you score more.
It's the old St. Helens method, that, isn't it?
You know, that's what I mean. Do I care? Likewise, would I be bothered if my team won 1-0 every week? Probably not, because they're still winning 1-0 every week.
Have they been scoring that many points, witness?
but that's my position. Obviously, other people would probably disagree, but I just sort of think... I suppose it's a fair point you make in terms of if they do get into an arm wrestle with someone, and, you know, if another team shuts them down where they can't score as many points.
Because I think that was part of the problem against Warrington,
yeah.
They started to figure them out, and that's when it turned
obviously Toronto were struggling to break down Warrington's defence, but Warrington were breaking through theirs at will, sort of thing. So, yeah, I can sort of see where you're getting at. But at this moment in time, you can't really see a team beating them from here on in, especially when they're in Canada.
Let's reflect on the rest of the championship results then. Batley 23, Rochdale 14, Halifax 22, Dewsbury Rams 22, London Broncos 46, Sheffield Eagles 12, and the game that we were at, which I thought was an absolute storm.
Yes,
Swinton and Barrow.
Yes, Swinton 22, Barrow 22. We had a really good game, really enjoyed it. We've been doing championship commentaries this season, and we've seen quite a few decent games. Barrow got a penalty in the very last minute to tie things up at 22-all. Swinton had scored 5 tries to Barrow's 3, but only kicked one of the goals, and that ultimately proved decisive in the end.
After the game, I caught up, first of all, with Barrow's Martin Aspinwall to ask him about the game and generally life at the Cumbrian club. This is what he had to tell me.
It was the same, the first time I played him on... Easter Monday, yeah, we got out to jail really with a penalty. Like I said, exactly the same. It's a point game for us. You know, I know Swinton have really marketed this game and geared this game for a win and just try and kickstart the season, because they've got a few games that they think they can win. But we show great character. We never give in. You know, we know that we can always come from behind. Which, I think all our wins this year and draws have come from behind. So we know we've got character and we can still play in the 80th, 79th minute. So yeah, we see that as a point game. Yeah,
I'm missing quite a few guys as well today.
Joe Bullock, Glenn Riley, Gene Owensby, Danny Morrow. We had about 5 out from last week. So yeah, we're doing it tough, but everybody has injuries. We can't, you know, but we, to lose 2 of our big middles, we had quite a light middle today. And like people like Alex Asino, the Australian, he played 80 minutes, he was outstanding, you know. He does help you to get guys who play big minutes. But yeah, we had men out, but that's the nature of rugby, isn't it? Hopefully we can get a couple back next week. Alec won't be here, he's going back to Australia for a wedding, so we're going to be one short. So if we can get a couple back in next week, we've got Sheffield, that's the game again, looks like a 4-pointer, so at the Bash, so we've got to... But focus on that, I think. Yeah.
That's 5 points from the last six. I mean, that's really good consolidation from Barrow, isn't it?
Yeah, in April we had all their full time teams. We had Toulouse, Toronto, Featherstone. I mean, we just wanted to get through that, we'd compete and get through it. We didn't get any wins, but we did give a good account of ourselves in them games. And then after that, we had Battle of Gisborough. In the Swinton, we've got Sheffield, Rochdale, all the games are people around us, teams around us. So them are games that we've got five out of six points we got. So yeah, hopefully get a couple more points. They're all 4 point games these. So to win against big players, teams around us is absolutely massive. We're a good way there already, but we can't get too complacent.
There's almost two divisions in one, isn't there, with the Championship? So you've got the full time teams up at the top, and then everybody else. Very, very similar team.
Yeah, you have. You've got, like you say, you've got your Torontos, your Toulouse, your Featherstones, and teams like that, Lee, who are obviously battling for that top four to gain Super League. And then beyond that, you've got all the teams like Jews battling, and like the teams I've mentioned, and it's a real dogfight. And I don't know what's happening with the structure next year. Is it too? Nobody knows what's happening, but we just want to be third from bottom because. That's how it's been. You know, it's been the last few years. So we, as long as we don't get relegated, we're up for every win, or you know, we'll stamp it.
You've been at Barrow a couple of years now. How are you finding it?
Yeah, I love it. It's the third season now. Obviously, I dropped down in division for the last 2 years. We've come up this year. We've done well. I really like it. I've moved up the area. I've got a job. So I've kind of embraced it all, really. Embraced all the history of the club. And the coach, Paul Crary, has been really good with me and the family. He's made me feel really welcome. I was at Lee for 3 years, and I just didn't have enough game time because every time I got a good run, I got injured. I had too many injuries, and obviously I couldn't get the run going. I didn't really feel appreciated or valued there. But up here, I've been really looked after, and I love it. I just want to keep playing. I've got another year after this year. I'm 37, 38. But I just want to keep playing. I'm enjoying my rugby, even though it's only part time, and the money's not. Obviously, it's not top money, but it's not all about that. It's about enjoying your rugby and wanting to play at the weekend and being part of a good team.
It looks like you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah,
I get that feeling.
I am, because I know now I'm 36, I ain't going to be around forever, am I? So you've got to really savour every game now at this stage in your career, because it doesn't last, could be over in a year or two. So yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, he sounds like he's enjoying himself there. Martin Aspinwall chatting everything Barrow Raiders. Good to see him getting back on an even keel. He had that really dodgy spell at Lee where he just couldn't stay fit and couldn't get the games behind him. He was obviously a much happier man than the Swinton boss, Stuart Littler. This is what he had to say to me.
Got ourselves back into in front. Just needed to see out the game. The penalty, just going to have to have another look at. I think it might have been a tough call, to be fair. But overall, probably didn't complete the best in the second half. We kept inviting Barrow into our half, and like I said to the boys in there, if you keep opening the door, eventually someone walks through it.
You did outscore them today, 5-3, and played some sparkling stuff at times as well.
Yeah, when we stick to the game plan and play the structures what we're meant to play, we're an exciting team. But we come in out of games, getting that consistency we're striving for. Obviously, we've got a point we wanted to. We've got to move forward to next week. It's coming thick and fast, and we've got a few games coming up, what are massive games for the club. I agree, when we do play two, we do question teams. But again, then we come back and do play 2 hours, then we back up with another play 2 hours, and then we're in our own half, and the game gets harder. It's a warm day. We back up with a few penalties, and we can't afford it. You know, play 5 penalties and stuff like that. You can't afford it at this level.
And there were times as well when you must have been thinking as well, just get it into touch, slow it down a bit.
When we got in front, maybe. But other than that, we tried to keep it on the island to obviously run them out of petrol a bit. But. Each week's different, and obviously the lads manage the game as they're seeing out there. like I said, a bit disappointed, but we can't blame it on goal kicks or anything like that. We did enough. We bombed a chance in two chances in the first half, one off a forward pass, one off a drop when he's scoring in the corner. We've got to nail our stuff on the end of the players, and if we get them two tries, obviously we're going to the changing rooms with a completely different reflection of the first half.
Every game has its challenges and its individual stories. You welcome Liam Paisley to the club.
Yeah, I thought he was outstanding. Liam's a good lad, he never gives less than 100%. He worked hard this week. I'd like to thank Wigan for obviously loaning us Liam for the month. It gives us a quality player, and obviously gives us some consistency moving into these games where sometimes we don't know if we've got for the next week and stuff like that. Obviously it gives us a balance for the team, and we know we've got access to that, a quality player for the next month. Thought he ripped in. Thought George Tyson was outstanding. We had some massive efforts. Obviously some of the middles did some big minutes in the middle, and Luke Waterworth, I thought he was quality in his first spell. Just disappointing really to obviously not get the 2 points what we're striving for.
You mentioned it before, you've got this run of winnable games coming up now, haven't you, over the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks?
Yeah, obviously we said it's a big month with Barrow and Rochdale and Sheffield, but we can't afford to look past whoever's next. Obviously today was Barrow, next week's Rochdale, so we've got Rochdale 2 weeks on the trot, once at Bash and once here. We need 2 points, and we've got to do whatever it takes to get them 2 points.
Oh, he didn't sound too pleased, did he?
Oh, he sounds as depressed as I feel, Dave.
Really? Oh, you feel that bad, do you? Yeah. Is this just being in the studio with me? Is that what does it?
Obviously they need to get win off. They've not won a game all season, so he very much sounds like a man who hasn't won a game all season.
Fascinating again. Yeah. I mentioned about, you know, rugby league chances and stuff. We were talking about it before, but the first game between these two sides finished 16-16, last minute penalty to secure a point. The second game finishes 22-22, last minute penalty to secure a point. It's no wonder Barrow were happy.
Well, that's it, yeah.
Just quickly before we go, wins in League One, and we'll concentrate a little bit more on this in future podcasts. Wins in League One for Workington Town against Coventry Burghs. For Hunslet, had a great win against Doncaster. Whitehaven did the business against London Scholars on the road. Bradford defeated Newcastle Thunder. We talked about that briefly before. Keighley Cougars travelled over to North Wales Crusaders and won by 46 points to 28. Oldham were the latest side to plunder West Wales Raiders, and York City Knights had a massive, massive victory against the Hemel Stags. What that does mean is that York topped the table alongside Bradford Bulls, and then there's a real logjam for who's going to get in those playoff places. Just before we go, and I know we've only got about a minute on this, so I've not given best time here, but England Knights, Papua New Guinea tour, that's got to be great for the game, hasn't it?
Yep, hopefully it'll be televised over here so we can see what happens.
First time that England Knights have got together as well since 2013, by the way. It kind of got mothballed, didn't it? And they've brought it back into circulation.
Yeah, like any game, any extra games are good.
And Kevin Naguama, big signing for St Helens next season. Is this just a tip that Ben Barber's not going to be hanging around?
I don't know. The St Helens chairman he came out pretty strongly, didn't he, saying there's no way he's leaving, or certainly he's under contract. But it'd be a very interesting prospect if St Helens can have both Barber and Naguama next season.
I think that he's a very good player. I'm looking forward to seeing how he does. But that's just about us done and dusted for this evening. James, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Did you know that you can listen to Radio General from your mobile device on the internet? Well, tune in at radiogeneral.co.uk. Click the Listen Live link and enjoy Radio General away from your bed. Listen everywhere at radiogeneral.co.uk.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.